Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm host Paul Vogelzang. So here we are the morning after Decision 2016, and regardless of how you view the outcome, some reflection is important. As we record this interview today with Dr. Arthur Lupia, author of the book Uninformed: Why People Seem to Know So Little About Politics and What We Can Do About It, the stock market is bouncing back but was down. President Obama, who to some was going to be an agent of change to restore hope in America, is being replaced by President-elect Donald Trump, whose campaign material emphasized Make America Great Again. Objectively, it's important to understand some of this, what's behind some of the results, what we can learn, and even consider, is this a triumph of democracy or the end of it? Dr. Arthur Lupia will help us understand some of that today. Dr. Arthur Lupia, welcome to the show. Dr. Arthur Lupia has been with us previously and was a big hit with our audience all over the globe, as a matter of fact. Dr. Lupia has written an important book, which we've talked about before, titled Uninformed: Why People Seem to Know So Little About Politics and What We Can Do About It. And he joins us today via Skype. Today is an important day, Dr. Lupia, so thanks very much for being willing to come on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, I wanted to talk with you for just a second because I want to unpack a little bit of the results with you, especially this idea of voter turnout, because it does tie in nicely with this, with your book and with some of the notions within the book. And it seems as though voter turnout was up approximately 5% across the country. In your own state, Dr. Lupia is joining us in Michigan. The Secretary of State, Ruth Johnson, said that the state broke a 44-year-old record and that voter turnout was robust. In my state, Virginia, it's the same. Yesterday, there were lines and large crowds. The Latino voting was apparently very strong everywhere. It was interesting that Trump seemed, as of today's kind of numbers, to win more Latino voters than Romney did 4 years ago. But people seem to be interested, and good or bad, given this election's kind of tumultuous yet riveting election cycle. And if the phrase, you know, when you don't know, you don't go, is true, are more people informed this election? Is that what you're making of all these results?
Well, I think the one thing, I mean, I saw poll lines all over the place yesterday, and you know, whatever you think of the result today, yesterday was a reminder of how much people care about the country and care about democracy. So, you know, people have different views of the result today, but the lines yesterday, the fact that people were willing to stand in them, I think was a real testament to the, you know, love people have of the country. So in terms of being informed, I mean, you know, politics is very complicated. There are a lot of issues at the state, local, and national levels. Even getting to be an expert on one or two of them takes a lot of work, and most people, you know, aren't experts on lots of issues. But they do know what's going on in their communities. They do know what's going on with their families. And, you know, when a campaign or a cause hits them where they live, they tend to perk up. And one of the things that the Trump campaign did, whether you like it or dislike it, it spoke directly to a set of aspirations and concerns that a lot of Americans had. So people who were not that excited about Senator McCain or Governor Romney were very excited about Donald Trump. And you saw that in some of the turnout yesterday.
While it is complicated, and certainly the issues can get very complex, that one thing seems to be clear, and that is that people know how they feel. And I guess if Democrats can be characterized as those voting for hope, you know, yeah. President Obama was really very much a leader in that area. And Republicans may be characterized as voting out of fear, then are people more likely to vote based on feelings that they have as opposed to being truly informed about the issues?
Well, I can say that as a general matter, in so many choice domains like voting, the fear of loss is a much greater motivator than the prospect of gain. There are actually results in psychology that are very well known about, you know, if you give someone a choice between, let's say, losing $100 and gaining $100, they'll work harder not to lose the 100 they already have than to try and get the 100 that, you know, that they don't have yet. And so I think you see that that idea in elections. But, you know, fear can be a motivator too. It can lead people not just to vote but to try and learn about issues. So one of the things that happens in an election, and I know it's really soon after the election, so if it's too soon, you might not want to listen to the next 30 seconds. But the day after the election, when you win, the belief is that you have a mandate and that everything aligned and that, you know, you're going to make progress. And there are so many people on the right today who think, finally, we got it right. Finally, the country is moving in a positive direction. And usually when you lose an election, you think, you know, those idiots on the other side, that they did not see how the world works and they made this terrible mistake and they're taking our country into the abyss. What's not a mystery to me is that on the day after an election, I'm going to hear both of those things.
Right.
The only mystery is who's going to say each version.
Well, we like talking to you because you tell us a version of all of this that is very much skewed in the science and the knowledge as well as the research. Thank you again for coming on this morning. We really appreciate it. Did we miss something? Did the pundits miss something? Was Brexit a barometer of what was to come? I mean, this morning, already Wall Street as of 10 a.m., the futures market is down 300 points. So, and that seems to be in keeping with this whole kind of protectionist notion of Brexit. Are people that fed up, and should the pundits have really listened more closely?
Well, let me say two things. So the first thing is the futures market dived when it looked like Trump was going to win. But this morning, the market actually opened up, right? So the shock already passed. And the same was true with Brexit. Like the first day, the markets were down 7%, but then a week they had recovered. So part of it is the shock factor. But here's a thing I'll say that people on the left get wrong. And it's we have this view of progress and internationalism and reducing trade barriers and bringing people together and having folks from different cultures interact more, whether we call it immigration or diversity or so forth. And so for a lot of people on the left, it's like, yeah, these are, of course, great things. Lower trade barriers means greater interaction, greater opportunity, greater diversity means we learn all this stuff. And so that's what that is a point of view. And it's a very powerful point of view. But it's not one that everybody shares. So at the same time that some people see immigration, trade, liberalization, diversity as these amazing steps in the progress of human history, other people look at the same phenomena and they see the life that they know and understand under threat, under siege. They see their concepts of right and wrong. They see their concepts of, you know, being secure in their neighborhood and thinking about the future of their family. They see these sort of foreign or distant forces threatening everything they know. And so the same phenomena is very threatening to them. If we go back to Brexit, you know, I have lots of friends who are economists, and they will say, you know, of course, trade liberalization leads to greater opportunities. But you can't have a guy in Brighton, you know, sort of or Manchester or one of the manufacturing communities whose family had worked at a mill for, let's say, 100 years, and that was the life they knew. And then all of a sudden the mill has moved to, you know, to Poland or Eastern Europe or South America or whatever because of globalization. The factory's closed. The jobs are gone. They're not coming back. And moreover, there are all these kind of strange people from other places now moving into their neighborhood. So sometimes people on the left like to say, well, look, here's the grand theory and here's why in the long run we're all better off. That family who can't see their future anymore, they can't hear that. And to them, that, you know, it's like, what are you guys doing in my world? And sometimes I think on the left, there's a degree of hubris where you say, well, you know, you just don't get it. This is really better for you. And the guy's like, no, I don't have a job. My family, our whole sort of way of life is gone. You're not listening to me. And I think some of what you see in the Trump phenomena is that same type of thing where, to the extent that there's elites, it's a left-leaning elite saying, no, the world is making progress and here's how we know. And you have these people saying, look, I don't feel the progress and moreover, I'm a little scared. So I think that's happened in both countries.
As we look at this, you know, again, one day away, as you point out, that some of the polls had missed this. And your work around polling and this science of research, you know, can teach us a lot. What can we learn today and then into the future about polls so that we can be better educated about this process and trust ourselves, you know, and not necessarily these trends, which often don't really predict the future, but only a kind of a moment in time.
Yeah. So let me say something that I think, you know, people will regard as controversial, but I think it shouldn't be controversial when you look at the facts. There are some problems revealed with how polls were used, right? Clearly a lot of polls were off, but the major media organizations in the country are really complicit in the error, even though they don't run the polls. And you might say, how can that be? Because there are some things that polls can do, and there are some things that polls can't do. And over the last 18 months in media coverage of the elections, many people in the media have just not asked the right questions about polls. They just treat them as manna from heaven. Mm-hmm. They treat the numbers as true. And what's been most ridiculous, I bang my head like every day when a new poll number would come out. And instead of saying, you know, what are the reasons that polls can come with different numbers, the person on TV tells you, oh, here's my theory of how the world changed because this number changed by 2 points. And it's not just in politics. The guys on Bloomberg do it too. When the stock market's up 6 points, like, oh, here's how the world changed today. So the media, in a sense, has not been honest with themselves or asked themselves, what can polls really do? They're just trying to feed the beast and put these numbers out there and treat them as they're true. And on a day like yesterday, where the polls don't match reality, only then do the questions come like, oh, well, what's wrong with the polls? But we know what's wrong with the polls, right? You're dealing with very small samples. B, telephone polling is just impossible the way it was a generation ago because many people don't have landlines, so they have cell phones. Many people have caller ID and voicemail and things like that. So there are tons of people who won't talk to you, right? So that makes polling difficult. There's what we call non-response. That is, if you ask people certain questions and they're a little sensitive about it, they don't have to tell you the truth. They can just hem and haw. And if you lived in a community where you were thinking about voting for Trump, but you thought you'd be called a racist or something like that, if you admit it, you'd say, oh, I don't know who I'm voting for. Or, I'm not sure I'm going to vote. So those are big problems. The other huge issue for polling is there are two ways you can try and measure the public. One is you can try and just do here's how the public as a whole is thinking about things. But what we're really interested in on election day is, well, what are the likely voters going to do? Because we know that, you know, even yesterday, only about 60% of the eligible voters vote. Now you have to come up with a likely voter model. And the problem there is sometimes people don't know if they're going to vote. So the organizations try and figure out what's the relationship between the people who will answer phone calls and talk to us and who's going to vote. And that turns out to be really hard to do. Now, one solution to all of this is to be really honest about all of that on television. Say, mm-hmm. Here's a poll, here are the caveats, and we're going to talk about it. But we're going to be honest that it's just a small sample when there are these problems. That would solve a lot of it. But I think, you know, if you can't do that, here would be my solution. For the next election cycle, anytime anybody on TV is talking about one of the polls that, you know, they commission, just have a little tag on the bottom that says for entertainment purposes only. Like just like that would make a lot of things clearer. The other thing I'll say is there are really good polling organizations out there, but the main news organizations don't use them because they're too expensive. So the last thing I'll say about this is, you know, this week both candidates spent a lot of time in Michigan. And places like Minnesota and you know, people on CNN were saying, well, that's strange. Why are they spending time in these states? And one thing that you might realize now is perhaps the Republican National Committee and the Democratic National Committee had better polls than CNN, right? Because they were actually sending candidates to the places that turned out to be decisive. But for the last couple of days, the media has been saying, why are they spending all this time in Michigan, right? Well, now we know.
Now we know. That's really great. It's so helpful. And Dr. Lupia, thank you so much for joining us today. This is really fascinating. You're just such a great guest. You're so smart and available this day. I have one final question, and it's kind of ties back to your book, Uninformed, and then this idea of kind of the counter to that, those that are informed. How do we know more about who's uninformed and who's informed? Is that drawn now clearly based on party lines? Is there a kind of a state-by-state difference? What about millennials here in this mix?
Yeah.
You know, Trump was keen on a strategy of appealing to those making less than $50,000 a year and those with a high school education, you know, or even less. And so how do we take some of those people, make sure they're informed about the right things? What's your research showing about that?
Well, here's, you know, the internet and social media have really changed the answer to the really important question that you just asked. Now on any topic, not just politics, if you want to drill down and become an expert on that topic, there's never been a better time in human history than now because of all the information you can get and gather and analyze and look at other. So that's amazing if you want to do that. But for most people, we don't have the time to do that. So we become an expert on the things that are really critical to our lives, maybe, And then everything else we just don't pay much attention to. Moreover, sometimes it becomes so overwhelming that we find comfort in cat videos and Pokemon Go for hours in a day to just try and relieve ourselves of that. So the reality is, on any topic, there are some people who are really informed, and there are lots of people who aren't. And so the key to breaking through, to giving people information, despite the fact that Pokemon Go and cat videos are available 24 hours a day, is to try and find a way to link this critical information to their lives, right? Because we're not going to be successful in telling people like how they should live if it sounds to them like we're saying eat your spinach, and they don't want to. But if we understand the real struggles in people's lives, the real fears that they have, the real aspirations that they have for themselves and their children, and we can find an overlap, we can find an intersection between the things that they worry about and dream about on a daily basis and the topic that we're talking about, when we find that intersection, we have an audience. Too often in the domains that I work, you know, people who have alleged expertise like myself, we just, you know, kind of walk up to someone and say, well, here are the 19 things you should know. And the other person says, why do I need to, like, what do I do with this information you're giving me? There's so much information out there. So the key to breaking through is not just being an expert, you know, if you want to be an educator, it's not just knowing what you know. It's trying to figure out this person you're trying to talk to, what do they need right now? Mm-hmm. And instead of trying to impose information on them, I think a better approach is to provide a service to them. And the service is, here is information that will help you improve life for you, yourself, your family, your community, and your nation. And that's the story I'm going to tell you. And if a person hears that story and it has information in it, then it doesn't sound like eat your spinach. It sounds like, oh, I get to have some spinach and some candy too. You know, I'll do this. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the key.
Dr. Arthur Lupia, thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Lupia is the Hal R. Varian Collegiate Professor of Political Science at the University of Michigan. And Dr. Lupia, I just want to say we value your expertise. Thanks so much for coming on today. We'll put links up to where to find you, your great book. We, of course, will be tracking you down and talking in the future about these subjects, because they're fascinating. Thanks so much for being on today and joining us and being such a great guest.
Thank you. It's a great privilege for me to be with you. I love your program.
Oh, thanks, Dr. Lupia. I appreciate it. Well, we'll be following up.
All right. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care.
You too. Thanks, Dr. Lupia.
Bye.
Thanks to all my guests today, all the help on the podcast and making me sound so much better. That is to say, not old, but better. Thanks to all.